I don't know if my listenership prefers the Keith McNally is happy episodes or the Keith McNally is sad episodes of AM Radio, if you can even dissect them that clearly. But today is not my favorite day ever. And it's not like there's anything incredibly clear about why I feel bad today, so I can't even just lay it on you like, whoa, hey, my grandma just died, you know, nothing like that. I know my good friend Keith Malley, when he does tune into these, he far prefers the McNally's a Mess episodes. I remember, like, that's one thing where it's, I don't know, my own psychology, at least, it's not too hard to unravel sometimes. Like today, well, a large part of not why I'm feeling bad, I guess the catalyst that kind of is shaking things loose inside me is I and the girl that I'm seeing right now. Our various problems. And today, I just had this desire to download some of my own old shows. I downloaded the one me and her just did, which is like 32. See, I kind of remember the numbers even sometimes. And I also downloaded episode 19. It was called I Think My Life Is Passing Me By. And it was like, it was 50-50. The first half, I was kind of keeping it together. And the second half, I just let everything about moving to New York and my life in general that had been piling up in me just spill out. Because you'll notice if you look at ham radios by their date, I did them sporadically back in Canada. And then, like, there was a big gap the summer I was in Vancouver with my friend Matt. It just didn't seem important. I was having fun. And then there's another big gap when I moved to New York, except it was the other thing. It was kind of overwhelming me. And I didn't feel like I wanted to talk because I knew if I did, all kinds of shit was going to spill out of me. And that is what happened once I finally did a full show. But it turns out that I liked that. I'm glad that the show got to that point. Because that's kind of what I'm doing now. It's like if I didn't just get the fuck out of that house, just fucking relax, you know, walk around, listen to some music, let my head unravel a bit. It's like I was going to fucking go mental. But speaking of Keith Malley, that one episode, number 19, he really liked that one. He played a bunch of it at the end of a Keith and the Earl once. And I remember after that show, when it was obvious that I was really having a tough time out here in New York, even though I didn't directly tell anybody. I mean, there were signs, I guess, ways. That episode I did like a week after I had a big fight with Henda. You know, things were coming out in bad ways. But I remember after that, I was talking to him on IM, Keith Malley, and, you know, he's one of those guys, it's just his personality is like, it's just, you know, it's the way I relate to him anyway. It's like jokes. We make jokes about stuff, which is a lot of fun, and it does always feel like there's distance, you know? That's how it is. But I remember this time on IM, he was telling me about places he'd been in New York, like really nice places. Places that he took girls, you know, like dates that he went on, just like amazing things that he's seen in New York. This is how I know I'm having a hard day. Dear Diary. So all I'm talking about is this one little thing that's really objectively not that big a deal, but everything just seems like a big deal. I don't know. On bad days. This reminds me of another story. Let me jump tracks for a sec. When I first moved to Vancouver, those were some rough times because I'd never lived outside of my hometown. And I moved all by myself, 2,000 miles away. And I had had a job before, but it was at a comic store, you know? It was not like a real job. Like, even just the fact of getting a job was hard. Like, I worked as a dishwasher, was my first job out there, and it didn't last very long, less than a month. But just the pure fact of getting off work and traveling home, which was a ways, I worked downtown, and I lived often in Nanaimo. You Vancouverites know, it's a little ride. Especially at 3 in the morning when the sky trains aren't working. But, I just remember, yeah, and like you get home and you don't even have time to fucking unwind. You just go to fucking bed and then get up and you gotta go back to work. And I got like a flu right in the middle of that. I remember having days at work, just misery, just had a glass of water next to me just so I could drink it anytime I felt a cough coming on, just to try to fight it off in this super muggy fucking dish pit where you get a rash on your legs. I don't know if people know that who haven't been dishwashers. Just enough water will just incidentally spray off of outside of the sink that gets on your pants, and you're always kind of wet and moist and damp, and you get a fucking rash. Can't remember what they call it. There's a word for it. So, like, it, because your pants rubbing against your leg. Anyway, job was just pure fucking misery. Just awful. I did not adapt to that at all. And I remember just one day where this guy who worked there, who just, one of the guys in the kitchen, I can't even remember his name, I just remember he seemed cool and nice. You know, just one of those cool together guys that is just kind of friends with everybody. Seems to kind of maneuver through different social spheres easy. He was the floater, if any of y'all read Queen Bees and Wannabes, except the boy version. I just remember him asking me one day, like, hey, man, how are you doing, Keith? Like, how are you doing at the job? How are things adapting? It was a fairly short conversation, and it was nothing out of the ordinary, but he was, like, the only guy who, you know, showed any interest in me at all, and I was so shell-shocked by this move and this crazy change in my life that I felt like I needed. I felt desperate to get away from my hometown, but it was tough at first in Vancouver. And I remember that kind of choked me up, just even him asking me that. So this was kind of similar, just that it was obvious that I was having a tough time, and in my own podcasty way was like kind of reaching out. I just remember it had a similar effect on me that Keith brought down his defenses so much and talked so straight to me, just, you know, like normal, just sort of help me out, give me a leg up, just sort of give me some direction, try to cheer me up. And I remember I saved that chat log. It's still on my desktop. He probably doesn't even remember that, you know? It's not a big thing. But it seemed like a big thing to me, because I really, I don't know, I just let things ball up. People outside, and things are just kind of slowly devolving, and nobody really knows. It's like a bad fucking joke how many people in my life have insisted that, like, they think I know what the fuck I'm doing, you know? They think that I've got it all figured out, that I've got some plan. The first time I remember hearing that was my Aunt Margaret, who's dead now, but back when she was alive, when I was like 16 or 17 or something, I just remember her saying that, like, Keith, I wish I had things figured out like you do, you know? At your age, you clearly know where you're going, you know what you're doing in life, you know, you got it all sorted out. I wish I was like that. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And it's just like, really? Are you fucking joking? You know, what the fuck? But I just said thanks. I don't know, what a weird thing to project. And then, doesn't matter how many years go by, it doesn't matter how fucking listless I clearly fucking am. Nobody, you know, I don't know. Matter of fact, I'll play that song. Let me play a fucking song, try to get my shit together a little bit. I'm having a hard time even talking. I'm gonna play Rudderless by the Lemonheads. When I first got this album, this was my favorite song for years. I've got the demo version too. I don't know which one I'm gonna play. So I downloaded those two ham radios, and I didn't listen to them all the way through, because combining them together, it's like 6.5 fucking hours or something. I just listened to the first 20 minutes of each one, I guess, while I was walking around doing stuff. I've been kind of chained to the house. I'm working on this Keith and the Girl Cruise DVD. We were trying to get it done before they leave for London, but that's not going to happen. There's no fucking way. So at least the pressure's off a little on that, because, like, I could rush all I wanted. It's not going to happen, so. But I don't know. It seemed coincidental to me. I was like, I just felt like listening to those two episodes. You know, why not? But, man, I mean, that's pretty fucking clear. I listened to the one with my girlfriend, Then I listened to the one where I was fucking... fucking depressed as shit. You know? I wanted to go back and hear that again. I never actually got to the part of the episode where I really let it fucking unfurl. But it's like... I guess it was like last week. I was also feeling bad about something. I mean, a different slant of the same thing, I'm sure. And I happened to find that on Juliana Hatfield's webpage, she's got this blog where every week she describes a different one of her songs, the story behind it. And it really paints a picture of like a chronically depressed person. I'm surprised her music is not more downbeat than it is, because that lady has got some, she's got a lot of problems. But there's a comfort to it also. I actually went through and I read a bunch of her blog entries, and I think I'm going to put them together as a show. But the first one I read, because I went through the list of the different songs she talked about, and Hotels is my favorite song that she referenced, that she talked about, and it's my favorite of the blog entries too. I was just going to read that one, and I think for this show I'll just play that one. It's another case where just reading it through, it kind of started choking me up a little bit. And then I lost the first bit of it because my fucking DV tapes are old and some of them don't work right. I gotta stop reusing them and just buy new ones. So I re-recorded that bit, so I don't know if it'll come through with any kind of sincerity or it's just a bunch of phony shit now, but... And I also editorialized her blog post somewhat, which I think could be construed as disrespectful. She got a little off topic too much. I edited them down, even this Hotels one that I liked so much. But it's just about being transient, not having a place in life. And it's also a very beautiful song. So let me go dig up me reading from Julian Atfield's blog, and then I'll play that song. Hotels isn't really a song about hotels. It's a sonic longing for home. Not necessarily for a physical place, but for the feeling of belonging, safety, assuredness, comfort. Sometimes between tours, I would go to my mother's house, the house I grew up in, to decompress and also to try to find some of that nice home feeling. But I'd find that that place wasn't really home anymore. I wasn't a kid anymore, and I didn't really belong there anymore. But that place was the only home I'd ever known. I wondered, writing the song, if I would ever have my own home, my own family. I'd just been dumped by somebody, and this, and my romantic track record, did not bode well. I'd been on the road for so long, in an endless cycle of write, record, tour, that I hadn't established a real substantial life of my own outside of the road. And I don't know if you can even call the road life. It's more like avoiding life, keeping real life at arm's length by escaping it, by putting it on hold while you dart around the country and the globe. I felt kind of lost when I wrote Hotels. I felt that I was in a transitional phase, but I also felt that my whole life was a transitional phase, always on the road, to somewhere, from somewhere. All I could think to do, all I knew how to do, was music, more music about wanting to go back to a time and place when everything seemed possible and I had all I thought I wanted and I had no worries. I didn't actually think that time or that place or that feeling ever really existed. Memory is part fantasy, but I wanted to feel that way. I wanted to go back to some idealized childhood that probably never really happened. Back to 9 or 10 years old, before my parents' divorce, before troubles. Before worry and depression and anxiety and boyfriends, but I knew it was impossible. Always leaving, always traveling, never home, that was my life. Even when I was home, I wasn't home. My restlessness, wanting, needing to escape from myself and into the music, into the road, into this vast country, was pathological. I needed always to be somewhere else to search for the geographical solution, even though Dad had warned me there is no geographical solution. Because when I stayed in one place for too long, I got scared. When I was still, I had time and space to think, and then I would start thinking about the emptiness, about what I missed and what I wanted but didn't have. So I would move to try and physically escape the fear and sadness, but by moving constantly, I gave up being able to make a home for myself anywhere. So I perpetuated the cycle of loneliness, rootlessness, homelessness. It was scary at that time when writing the song to think that I may not find an answer, that my longings may never be resolved, and that maybe this spiritual homelessness, was my fate and my life for now and forever. Scary to think that there's only in between journeys, between destinations, between point A and point B, because there is nothing and no one at either end, nothing and no one to go home to but an apartment. The only life I had was hotels and recording studios and rock clubs, and that's no life after a certain point. My life was like the tree branch rope, always swinging back and forth. It's easier for me to deal with these uncertainties now. I have learned how to handle my situation. It has stopped feeling so scary and begun to feel more like a kind of unlimited freedom. I'm not stuck anywhere. I can do whatever I want, go anywhere I want, whenever I want. Instead of seeing my not belonging as a curse, I can look at it as a wonderful kind of freedom. It means the future is still unknown and completely open. And that's kind of exciting. Anything could happen.
Streets.
I'm actually walking down that exact same stretch as when I recorded Ham Radio 19. Same neighborhood, same streets, same roads. The show really, it like fucking folds in on itself now, where if I listen to old shows, it obviously reminds me of the time and the place I was at when I did them. But then also if I just go to the same places where I was when I recorded them, I remember. So being here, I'm remembering that show. I remember the exact part when I walked down the street and I referenced the God Bless Americas that are here. How often do you see that? It's kind of weird, I'm sure, to be this confessional. I remember Keith Miley mentioned that too. Because dude is incredibly perceptive. He is, I think, Ms. Spooky mentioned this about him too, that he's like maybe, he might be the most perceptive guy I've ever met, you know? I mean, he's a fucking weird fella in some ways. But he doesn't call things wrong from a personality basis very often. Like, he knows what's up with people. He knows what their, you know, like, kind of what their trauma is, why they're acting like they're acting, why they're hiding what they're hiding, what it is that they're hiding. He can read you, basically. And I just remember just a little while ago, I can't remember the context, but on one of his shows, he's the host of the Keith and the Girl show, by the way. If anybody, by some fucking crazy cosmic coincidence, listens to this show and doesn't listen to that one, go listen to it, because it's the best show. But he mentioned how much he likes fucking, like, blogs and Twitters and podcasts, because everybody just spills their guts, you know? Everybody lets all their shit out. And that's definitely what I do. But it really is, like, it's like talking to yourself, but not at the same time. I mean, there's no harm in this. There's no harm in just talking out into the internet, even if I'm having a hard time saying words because I'm getting emotional, you know? It's a hard thing to do in front of people. But, I don't know, it's like, what does it fucking matter? What does it matter if it's on a podcast? What does it matter if I get an email about it later? What does it matter if people know? It doesn't fucking matter. No one gives a shit. I mean, I guess it's like somebody reading your diary, but that's fine. That's part of my weird voyeurism, maybe, but I always thought diaries were there to be read. I never understood the idea of a diary that's just for you. I don't know. Seems more therapeutic if it's somebody's going to hear it. Or at least seems more like there's a reason to do it, at least. If I was just recording these tapes, I've said this before, but if I just put these tapes in a fucking shoebox under my bed, I wouldn't. I wouldn't bother. What would be the fucking point? Anyway, I lost my train of thought a little bit. I guess I don't really have a train of thought. This is just unraveling. This is just trying to make myself feel a little better. I was just listening to Sloan's album, Never Hear the End of It. I'll talk about that a bit in a sec. But I'm going to play a song. The album's got 30 fucking songs. It's like, it fits on one CD, but it's essentially a double album. So there's things on there that, I don't know, kind of slipped through the cracks for me. Like this song is called It's Not the End of the World. It's one of Chris Murphy's songs. And I don't know, today it just kind of stuck out. It seemed like it fit. Or it seemed, I never noticed it before, and today I liked it. So I'm going to play it, and then I'm going to play Light Years, the song that comes right after it. That I have played before. I played it way back. Me and Brad did a show called Goodbye Fredericton. And I always make this effort not to play songs twice, but I think I'm going to relax on that. Who fucking gives a shit? So what if I play the same goddamn songs every week? I mean, I won't anyway, but if I want to hear a song more than once, you know, who fucking cares? It's my lawless, unregulated podcast. So this is It's Not the End of the World and Light Years by Sloan.
not the end of the world, but into a ball you are curled. Winter will pass, when it does, you can go, 'cause it isn't what it was. Say the snow made us do it just because. While we weighed the pros and the cons, the sun had unfrozen the ponds. Winter had come to an end. I don't know if you will call me your friend. Say it so, or I'm liable to pretend. Mark on the world, at times into a ball I have curled, so I had to move on. But I'll always be fond of you. Winter was hard on us all. Bundle up, 'cause it already feels like fall. I'm all right, but I don't mind when you call. We can talk of our brief time in the sun. I think she said it's like a kiss from God, then she laughed. Still I found it odd that I'm only realizing just how she is light years away from me now. Have you seen the stars above from the roof? She repeated while I acted aloof, 'cause the only thing on my mind was the light years between our own kind. Still I like the addiction is sweet, will I savor the fall? But if you hit the bottom floor, will I still hear a knock at my door? Oh yeah. Addiction is sweet, that much I recall. But if you hit the bottom floor, you'll see the light above my door. I don't hear from you so much anymore, and I wonder if you're still gonna score with the stars that are shooting tonight. I'll keep track of them upon this flight, and I hope you don't split scene and make the light years seem like a dream. Oh yeah.
Listen to this fucking pretzel brain shit. While I was listening to those songs, my phone started vibrating, and I thought it was Ian calling me. It's like, oh nice, you know, I'll talk about this more later, but I don't know, I'm like weirdly nervous to talk to her, but I want to talk to her too. So I pulled my phone out, and it was just my alarm, because when I sent her a text earlier today saying, hey, you know, if you get home early enough tonight, you want to give me a call, I would like to talk to you. But I felt like it was too soon to send it, you know, like, I know she's out with a friend tonight, I don't want to just bug her while she's trying to have fun. So I set my alarm. I was like, okay, wait till like 9 o'clock and then send it. But then I got impatient at about 8:30 and sent it. So that was all that was. That was my alarm going off telling me, hey, send that text now that I already sent. So the point is, it wasn't her. So that's Sloan album. Let's see if I can unravel these particular thoughts a little bit. It's starting to get cold here in New York. It's like early October. And I don't know, I've got all these mixed feelings about going back to Canada, you know? A lot of fucking bitter sweetness. I really don't like winter. I don't like when it's freezing cold. Like, it gets so cold in Canada, it's fucking cold. It's mental. Go back and listen to Ham Radio 8 for that one. Big into Devo these days. I fucking recorded it during a... as well have been a goddamn blizzard. It's funny. Because pain is funny. But just this feeling in the air of it being a little cold. You know, the air... when you breathe in, you know, you feel it. Right now I'm wearing my Keith and the Girl hoodie that I haven't been able to wear in ages because it hasn't been cold enough. Probably don't need it, but I am wearing like a hat, a winter hat. Been pulling out the long underwear once in a while lately, and I don't at all mind this time of year. I kind of like it. This really does remind me of home. And it was about this time of year that I first moved back home from Vancouver. Like, I'd been out there 2.5 years, I think. And things started off rocky, and then there was like a year in the middle where I was seeing a girl and everything was going really well, and despite our relationship drama, I was generally quite happy. Really happy. I mean, I really was. It was amazing that I had transformed my life so much that I pulled away from everything that was safe and easy and went out on this tough fucking track, but it's like I won the jackpot. Everything was coming up roses, you know? I just remember waking up. And it was like, I worked at a coffee shop. I didn't even have a good job, but it was like, wow, really? That's all I have to do? All I have to do to buy my ticket into this fucking fantastic wonder world of a city of Vancouver, you know? This wonderful, amazing place where I have fun all the time, and I have tons of friends through that coffee shop mostly, but I really like them. Like, a lot of good people work there. Erin, who I used to do Lageria with, worked there. That's where I met her. That's where I met the girl that I was dating. That's all I gotta do. All I gotta do is go sling coffee 3 days a week, and I get to live here. I get to live in this amusement park life. Like, it was fucking magical for a little while there. So once it started falling apart, I don't know about that. I mean, I'm the one who broke it off with that girl, and I don't think I was wrong to do it, but Jesus, if I only realized the fucking heartache in store for me, I thought I'd be able to just get back on my feet. And for a little while, it did seem that way. I was dating and shit and being a normal person and everything was fine, and then it slowly just like ground down into the exact same phenomenon I was talking about earlier of like just internalizing all my problems. I didn't have a job, and it was this... I can look it up. It was... what year was that? 2006? Maybe. It was like the darkest month on record. It was in October, even. It was the same fucking time of year where there's like just no sun. It was insane. And I just was like... I remember I was going to the thrift store by my house and buying... they had these ultra cheap computers, like super retarded old computers for like... I think I got one for $12, one for $15, one for $20. And none of them quite worked, but that was my thing. I was going to try to get one to work. Why? Who knows? I mean, when it was done, even if it worked, it would be such an old shit computer. It would be a joke, but it was just fun to try. And my whole apartment was just filled with computer parts, like a weird junkyard. I was getting really internalized, really into my own weird place. I remember I had a keyboard for a while till it broke, like an electric piano. I was teaching myself songs. That was fun. I felt better then. But fuck was I talking about? Yeah, and then the only reason I finally cleaned up, I gave up on that project and cleaned up all the junk because my friend Mark came to visit, and while he was there, that's when I got fucking pepper sprayed in the face. But, yeah, I don't know. That apartment scattered with random computer, broken computer parts seemed indicative of my mindset. I just remember it got so bad that, like, I was just, I could not wake up during the day. I couldn't. I think it was like a psychological thing where I knew if I got up, I would have to go do something. I'd have no excuse to not go look for a job, you know? And I was running out of money slowly but surely, like, but I just couldn't do it, man. I was like, I stayed up all night. I remember even just like trying to get up to go to the post office or something before 5 o'clock. I couldn't fucking do it. It was insane. It was like 2 weeks where I just couldn't do it. And I don't know how long this dragged on for. A couple of months, easy. Before Mark came to visit and sort of fucking righted me. I must have still been doing Lageria then, though, because I remember I did a couple of those with Mark. So, I don't know, maybe Aaron was my anchor to fucking sanity. But I remember, it was hard to even leave the fucking house. Like, I can't believe how fucking, to quote Evan Dando, I can't believe how far I slipped, but secretly I'm glad I did. But I remember, Shawshank Redemption is my favorite movie, and I remember I wrote the words, "You're not going to make it on the outside," and stuck them to the wall next to my door. Just because at least seeing those kind of, like, spurred me on a little. Like, yeah, fuck you. What do you mean? What the fuck do you mean I'm not going to make it? Go fuck yourself, Keith McNally, who wrote that and put it on the wall. You know, like, just something to jog me out of my lethargy or to, like, fucking at least make me aware that I was just fucking not doing anything. Just letting myself be passive. I lost my train of thought again. I'm going to play. I'll get back to what I was saying about Sloan's album after this. But this is, I listen a lot to this show called The Ongoing History of New Music. It's a Canadian radio show by this guy named Alan Cross, ongoinghistory.com. You can get torrents of it and stuff. It's fairly mainstreamy, but it's interesting. Not always either. Sometimes he digs up old weird vinyl records that have never been pressed to CD and stuff. But it is a program intended for mainstream radio. But it's interesting. It's just shit about music in general. So yeah, this four-part thing about, and it's totally about alternative era music, you know? My music, if they're, you know, my place where I fit. It never goes back too far. They never have a spontaneous episode about hip-hop, you know? If they did, it'd be about rap rock, and they did. Anyway, there's one about Britpop. They were talking about how flash-in-the-panny British bands can be because England is so small, such a dense population compared to North America, that fads and trends just go by faster. And this, like, if a music magazine gloms onto you, you can really make it big for a little while. So this band is called Gene, and I guess they were getting, like, shit like the cover of Enemy and, like, Band of the Year, Gene. Nobody outside of England ever heard of motherfucking Gene. Probably English people my age are like, yeah, fuck, of course I know Gene. Everybody knew Gene in 1995 for 1 month. But I never heard of them. But he played this song on his show, and I really liked it. So, and this is a little tricky to track down. Apparently Gene put out a ball load of albums, but this is the only one I could find because this was the big one, and even this was very hard to track down. Not very hard. Like, when it's very hard to track something down on the internet, that means it took 2 tries, you know? But I don't know what this is called. Be My Light, Be My Guide, I think. I like this song. We'll be right back.
drinking. Oh, it's evil ways, and then I will be your friend. So please be my guide, be my light. Oh, can you really help me now? I am lost, there's no way out tonight. Oh, when I was here, oh, mama, she used to laugh at me and cry. You'll be lonely when you die. Couldn't change it if you tried. Oh, I've been home for so long now, so take me back, will ya, to the thrills of town. And tell me more about women. Yes, I had four last night, so can I be your friend now? Please be my guide, be my light. Oh, can you really help me now? I am lost and there's no way out tonight. Oh, when I was young,
leveled out enough that I can talk normal now. I don't have to keep stopping between my words, because I feel, you know, before I was feeling things well up in my throat. I just couldn't talk. I don't feel that now, but it's like my eyebrows are just lodged into this scowly look. You know, like I could deliberately move them into a different position, but I just don't want to. They just feel comfortable like this. I remember when I was in high school, and even like probably a couple of years after I got out of high school, I would walk around my hometown like this without realizing it. Like, I remember it happened enough times that I really started recognizing it. Like, be like, man, I'm just like, got this hard look for everybody. It's my fucking brow is furrowed or descended. What the fuck you call it? And I didn't realize. Like, I didn't even realize I was doing it. I certainly realize it now, so that's good. I don't think it even happens that much anymore. It's not my natural response to the world. So I guess that's a good sign, right? There we go. I don't know, I just feel myself unwinding. Yeah, I'm just like moving my face around now. Making weird funny faces. See, that's where I think the therapeutic value of this could come in. Is just expressing things. Man, that's half the fucking battle. Just identifying what's going on. I really think 50% of what you got to do is right there. Some people having like a barbecue picnic thing outside in their driveway, even though it's 9 at night. That's weird. That looks kind of fun. Yeah, you know, you identify things and then, like, you can feel them melt away like that. And then the other half is, I don't know, I guess I wouldn't say harder. They're both hard. Longer, though. It's maintaining. You know, that's one thing with Ayan. She also identified me as a person who seems to know where they're going in life, you know. Not worried about the future, not worried about direction. But in what I assume was meant in a positive way, maybe not. But she also didn't take long to peg me as somebody who balls things up. It's obviously true. It's kind of what I guess the theme of this show has been. Things, I mean, I guess that's how it always is in relationships, right? Things seem so easy at first. It just seemed like we were just, well, I don't know. I guess I can't even say that's true. There were always things between us that were weird and tricky. But it really did seem very clear that me and her were both very good for each other. And I guess it's less clear lately just because we fight so much. I don't know if we even fight that much, but it's like every time it's like the worst. It's just, it takes so hard to get past it. And I just, it doesn't even make sense. Like, I just don't understand what's happening between us. I don't understand how we get in fights about things that don't fucking matter. We got in a big fight about divorce law the other day. What the fuck? What the fuck does that matter? How did that ever turn into, like, a fight? How is that more than a discussion? How did that happen? I don't know, like, I mean, I guess it helps to talk to people about stuff, right? But I don't know, I mean, maybe I'm just not talking to the right people, but unless you can really get in depth with somebody about this stuff, it's like, I don't know, it's not that their answers are stupid or that their assessments are stupid, it's just that any one-note assessment is stupid, you know? It doesn't matter what it is, it's not going to be this shining. Oh, my phone's moving.
something true? Are you slipping away?
Are you slipping away?
Slamming another nail. Too slow, you rot, too fast, you fail. Says a clever book of clever things to say. And is that why?
seeing everybody that you want to, can you?
Ain't nobody around, I'm just sitting here by myself with next to nothing on my mind, yeah. Ain't nobody around, I'm just sitting here by myself relaxing on the borderline, yeah.
You're the only girl I love, I'm on many kinds of drugs. I can't see and I can't breathe and I can't stay and I can't leave. If it's good, let's take it slow. Baby, I'm a fucking joke. And if I can, I'll do my best and do it right regardless of this.
Making a scene in a bright Star-Spangled Banner played, and I couldn't keep my eyes open. I stayed till the bugs dried up and fell off on the table, and there was no hope of my saving.
Wasn't even going to end this show. I was just going to let it play out. But I will, because there's one last thing I wanted to say. Definitely wasn't the greatest phone call of my entire life. I want to add to my New York checklist of things that I did. We can now add huddled in a corner by a construction site in Queens so nobody can see me while I fucking bawl my face off. Wipe my nose on my shirt. I read this thing about techniques to use when you feel yourself losing your temper. Because I really think that's the biggest problem in I and an I's relationship, which is just barely still can be called a relationship. The fucking cord hasn't quite snapped yet. And God bless her for not, I don't know, for sticking in with it. That I always had this terrible temper ever since I was a kid. Like, it was at lunacy levels when I was a kid. It was always video games that would set me off, but I honestly remember, like, the last really bad temper tantrum I ever remember throwing. I remember I was playing Sega Genesis, so I was getting old enough that this was just not acceptable behavior anymore. Not that it was before, but absolutely not now. It was fucking Kid Chameleon. Anyone remember that fucking game? And I knew nobody was in the house. Nobody was gonna hear me. I was allowed, you know, allowed to fucking release, to just explode. I just, I don't know, I was really firing that game, and things fucked up. I died real fast, lost a bunch of men in a row. But, I mean, it's not about that. That's not why. It's everything in my fucking life, you know, every fucking goddamn thing that just piles up, and I just let it build up inside me and build up and build up and build up and build up until it needs to fucking come out somehow. And I just remember fucking just going berserk, like, I was out of my fucking mind. I just remember just getting so fucking mad at that game. I mean, I got to the point where I would get mad in front of my friends. I didn't care. I'd just lose my temper. Like, I somehow justified it, like it was okay. Because it was the video game doing it to me, you know, it wasn't me. But I knew this day was different because nobody was home and I could just go fucking lunatic levels. And it felt literally like I wasn't in my body anymore, you know? Like an out-of-body experience. It was so fucking crazy. It was just out of my fucking head. Anyway, I got older and I learned how to deal with it. And it's not just me, and it's like my brother has that problem big time. And my dad has a terrible temper. And then I found out from my mom, when I was talking to her, she was like that when she was a kid. Like, just really bad temper. And she told me about a couple of my uncles. Like, I have like 12 or 13 aunts and uncles on that side of the family who were the same way, especially when they were younger. Or even, like, in their late teens, early 20s, like, get drunk and just, like, go berserk. Or, like, go to the bar and just pick fights and get the shit kicked out of them. But, like, just be Tasmanian fucking devils. Just nuts. So, on both sides of my fucking family, I got that gene. Fantastic. On my dad's side, too, I got the addiction thing. I got my fucking grandfather was a drunk. My dad's a fucking 30-year pothead. And my brother is a junkie. Fantastic. Easily addictable, anger-prone people. Thank you very much. Not that I'm complaining. Obviously, I'm very happy to be alive and here on the planet Earth. But that particular genetic lottery is not my best trait. Anyway, I think that's why I get in these arguments with Ian about stupid things that I don't really even care about. And as soon as I start feeling antagonism or start feeling angry, I need to just fucking shut it off. I need to shut it down. I need to guard it. I need to keep people away from that. Which I do in the worst fucking way, which is to get aggressive and, like, get angry and mad. Like, leave me alone. Stop fucking arguing with me. Stop fucking pushing me toward this thing that I don't want to have happen. Which is incredibly not nice. And I really think it would be anyone. It would be anything. It's just in me, you know? If anybody wants a sample, fuck. Go find the Keith and the Girl. The 74-hour podcast, Batman Meets Soccer Girl episode, I think it was. I still haven't listened back, but that's when I got in a big argument about cell phones and cell phone privacy and shit. And I distinctly remember having to apologize a couple of times for, like, getting so mad. Like, I'd go to the bathroom and come back and say, like, I'm fucking sorry, everybody. I'm sorry I got so mad. brain does not interpret it the way I do. I interpret it as a fight, as I lost my temper. I acted like a fucking idiot, and I try to do better next time or something. Try to find some way, which seems so impossible. Like, I don't fucking know what to do. I don't know how to fucking avoid that. It just seems like it's... like, I'm just fucking riding toward the fucking cliff. I don't know what the fuck to do. But she interpreted it as the reason why I get that way, the reason why I'm willing to engage her in such a disrespectful way, you know, such a fucking hard-edged, abrasive, mean way, is because I don't like her, because I don't love her, because I don't... because this... because whatever disagreements I have, whatever things about her that I disagree with, that I just hate them, that I must hate them, and I must hate her. That's a double-edged sword, because then I'm... I know it's just me. I know it's my fucking problem. And then she wonders why I'm just so focused on myself, you know, instead of us. I don't know, man. Anyway, what I wanted to say, what I was saying earlier about that Sloan album, never hear the end of it. The nerdism side of me wants to mention that a band like Sloan puts out a 30-song album. If they were a younger band, like, that'd be fucking remarkable. Music nerds of the world would take notice. They would be fucking impressed as hell. But because Sloan is an older band, and it was like their 7th album, 8th album, it's so much harder to make a dent, so much harder to be noticed. It just seems much easier for a younger band to be lauded for their accomplishments like that. On the other hand, Sloan has had some kind of lame-ass albums. Like, they've got a lot more weight behind them. Maybe that's part of why. But I read that in a review somewhere, that assessment, that if a younger band pulled this off, everyone would be impressed as shit. Sloan does it, and it's not such a thing. I find I enjoy reviews like that more and more as I get older. I don't really fucking care if people think something is good or bad. I don't give two fucks what you think. I'd rather know something about it. I'd rather know why it's cool, you know? Connect it to something for me. Let me understand what went into it, what the thought process was, why I might be able to appreciate it. I remember I was talking to Devin Beer Chick on the Keith and the Girl Cruise. I can't remember the album she's talking about. I wish I could remember the name. Black Wave? Is that a band? I know it's a Shin song. Anyway, it was some album that she really liked. Like, really liked. Like, her favorite in quite a while. And on that Sound Opinion show, they reviewed it and trashed it. They're like, bah, this sucks, don't bother. And she's like, what? What the fuck? Seriously, be cool, you know? It's like, that's not a useful review. Connect it to something, you know? Give me something to sink my teeth into. Give me some peripheral information. Give it context. Let it fit in the world. Show me where it belongs. Don't just say it's shitty. That's fucking stupid. God damn it. So this Sloan album, when I went home, you know, when I finally gave up on Vancouver, I was like, it's just, I toughed it out for like 6 or 7 months of just not doing well. till I finally was like, I gotta go home. I can't do this anymore. And I had no plans. I was like, Vancouver was the plan, you know? So I didn't know if I'd ever leave again. I thought maybe I would just stay in my hometown forever. Who fucking knows? It was very kind of fucking scary to go back. I really didn't want to, but I felt like I had to. So my dad had that Sloan album. It was this really nice stereo up on the third floor of my parents' house. And a lot of our musical tastes don't overlap. Not very often. So that was cool. I was like, hey, I always wanted to hear this Sloan CD. Let's give this a roll. And it took some time for it to sink in because it's a very long album. But I remember I listened to it a lot. And that was the year that I ended up moving in with my cousin Dan. Well, 8 months anyway, and babysitting his niece, Alessandra. She was like 2.5 when I started. And when I think back to my life, my adult life, that year I was with that girl in Vancouver was, by and large, like, I felt I was in the right direction, you know, it was something worthwhile. And the other time is the 8 months that I spent babysitting Allie. I was a live-in babysitter. I spent all kinds of time with her. I almost never left. It's just that's what I did. That was my job. And I really felt like I was doing something important and that mattered and that was worthwhile. And I was teaching her the alphabet and just whatever I could teach her. Just to be there. And I know she was only a 2-year-old kid, but I really felt like that kid loved me. And I felt like I had to move away. I went back to Vancouver for 6 months, and then I came here to New York because she's not my daughter. It wasn't my life. I wasn't really going anywhere, but it was very hard for me to leave. And then when I came home, before I came here to New York, I was only home a month, I think. And I was kind of afraid she wouldn't remember me. I mean, I've been gone 6 months, and she is 3 years old when I left. But she did remember me, and she was really happy to see me. Apparently, even when I was gone. I don't know, when she would see somebody on the street, you know, that looked like me, she'd be like, hey, is that Keith? But now I've been gone like 9 months. It'll be a whole year before I get back. I hope she remembers me. But I'm gonna have to rebuild things, you know, it won't be the same as it was. Probably leave again. I don't know where the fuck I'm going. Montreal or something? I don't fucking know, but somewhere. It's gonna be different too. I mean, she's like 4, almost 5 now? I don't know. I mean, it's a big difference with kids. She has to forget me eventually, right? I mean, nobody fucking remembers being 3 years old. I don't fucking remember. That was one of those times in my life that I look back at with no regrets at all. It really did seem worthwhile. I don't really have any songs I can play that Allie liked because she didn't like music. I don't know, I try to get her into stuff. Like I found Devo 2.0. It's like a Disney thing where these little kids play Devo songs. So maybe that'd be cool, but she didn't like it. It's not that she didn't like music. She liked some stuff. She had an alphabet CD. Like went through every letter of the alphabet, had a different song for each one. She was into that. I wasn't. That was fine. I still played it all the time. So I'm just going to play some songs from that Sloan CD. I'll play a song from their new one too. I guess that's it.
She kept her feet on the ground. Destiny to find the final flag.